to order.
You want to announce now? Yes, we have enough from staff.
I just wanted to announce, members of the committee, that you have at your place a letter, some testimony on this department's budget. I put it at your place, and we'll ensure that it gets inserted into the record. It was faxed to our office yesterday.
Great. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5501, Department of Agriculture. Anything to add with this?
Nope.
So, Ms. Koba, you're on again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is Katie Koba, Director of the Department of Agriculture. I'm going to start by distributing some information that the committee has requested. First of all is information on the PARC program, the Pesticide Analytical and Response Center. We have a letter responding and one copy of a report. Then we have, and this was in response, I believe, to a question that Representative Morgan had about frequency of inspections in the food safety program, and so we have the response to that as well. Okay. And we have increased the size of print on the 30% reduction list.
What?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Because I didn't have a chance to get different glasses overnight.
And one more, Paul. The list of the projects funded under the specialty crop grant.
Then we had a couple of handouts that you gave us. Do we have those two to give out to the committee?
Well, let's see.
We were going to talk about those.
Well, we'll see what we did with those.
Yeah. It is. We do. Yeah. So you know why we're running light today.
Thank you.
Light today. Part of our committee is attending a meeting with the co-chairs, and the rest of us are going to be doing the same meeting at 3 o'clock, so we're going to be a little shorthanded. And we've got some more handouts coming here.
Mr. Chair, I thought, well, obviously, if you have a preference for how you want to proceed today, I think the two key pieces that perhaps we need to review are the prioritized list.
Just hang on, Matt. We're trying to get organized.
Yes. Should have a PARC letter. A food safety inspection letter.
Kenny, let me go through you what we've got.
Okay.
And the rest of the committee, just to make sure we're all on the same page. The pesticide analytical response, do you have?
We don't have the full report.
Nope, that's just the one.
One report, but, each of you have a letter.
Okay, so I'll give you back that.
Okay.
You got that one. You see the testimony that Paul just spoke of. We've all got this spreadsheet that's bigger. We have answers to legislative questions from budget hearings. We have
specialty
crops. The Golder study.
Grant. It's actually a list of all of the grants that we've made under the specialty crops program.
The committee all should have the Department of Agriculture vacancy list, which should have been in your books. And we've got the complaint intake information.
And amend the prioritized list of programs. Should be in your book. Okay. Do we have extra copies?
Great.
Okay. Yeah, good choice. If it gets too bad, I'm going to be called out to another committee here shortly.
All right. I thought, Mr. Chair, it might be useful for the committee to spend some time on the prioritized list and answer any questions you might have on the vacancy list.
This is the one you blew up.
No. That's 30% That's the 30% cut list. That's the vacancy.
All right. This is better. This is better side training.
So we're starting on the prioritized list.
Should we do that?
Okay, that's fine.
Okay,
and just and the request I made for all of your funds doesn't have to come back today, but
Mr. Chair, we are working. We're in the process of pulling that information together.
I appreciate that. Okay, let's talk about your priorities then.
What we did with this program is we took, with this list, is took all of our programs in the agency, which we reviewed with you the last few days, total of 40 programs, and as requested, placed those in a prioritized order, our best efforts at a prioritized order. At the very bottom, and this is in small print, you can see that the principles that we used in helping us to guide the priorities. The first one was impacts on public health. And what we did, we noted public health as a PH, so in the second column where it says program impact, line one, for example, you'll see PH. So that's a public health program. The food safety program is a public health program. And then you can see on down that column, the second one, animal health, is both public health parts to it as well as economic development. So we tried to categorize how we viewed the various programs. So our first criteria was protecting public health. The second criteria was those programs that provided economic development for the industry. The third criteria was those programs which provide environmental protection or protection in our natural resources programs. Then those programs which are part of, in our, from our perspective, part of our agency's core mission. And then we also looked to see, think through a little bit if there were other ways of meeting the requirements in the program. So we took those factors, and that's what drove our prioritized list. We did not prioritize based on funding. So then you will see that we have listed the programs, and then we have shown for you how those programs are funded. So, for example, priority number one is a public health program, the food safety inspection program, that is funded total funds of $8.1 million, $6.65 million of those are other funds through fees, and there's $1.4 million plus of general fund in that program. You can see the FTE associated with that program, and finally the statutory citation for the program. So basically what you have, programs 1, 2, and 3 are all significant public health components. The food safety program, the animal health program, which prevents animal health diseases, and these are diseases which can be transmitted to humans. And then third, plant pest and disease programs. Those are three top priority programs. Then you see a section of programs which are economic development focused. Item 4, the Ag Development and Marketing Division. 5, our Export Service Center. 6, the Nursery Christmas Tree Inspection Program. Those are key economic development supported kinds of programs. And then programs 7, 8, 9, and 10 all are interrelated and deal with the Oregon Plan, the Confined Animal Feeding Operation Program, and Weed Control Program.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, this, Representative Krieger.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about the weed? I know what you mean by weed. What are you actually doing in that program that would have it that high on the list? I know about the exotic weeds that are causing problems, you know, that type of thing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, this is the exotic weed control program, the noxious weed control program, okay, is actually the formal title of it, and it deals with things that can be a major economic disruption to agriculture, horticulture, and even forestry.
Okay.
And then you can see we go down the list. We have our base pesticides program, shellfish program, the weighing and measuring device inspection program, feeds, fertilizer, all on down the list.
Katie, if you could, and this might take a whole other study now that I think about it, but it would be interesting to note if there's possibilities for any other type of funding or fund shifts, as we obviously we're primarily interested in the general fund and the lottery funds. No secret what the state as a whole is looking at. And so as you go down the list here, if you could maybe not identify, but it just indicate if there's possibilities that we could look for other ways to keep some kind of a program in place.
And we can do that a little bit right now if you'd like to try to do that. The food safety program is a program that received a fund shift during the special sessions. And I think Lisa was talking to this earlier. Coming into this biennium, it was about a 70-30 other fund to general fund, and the fund shifts that we took through the course of the special sessions has moved that to an 80% other fund, 20% general fund. That's one program that, in the conversation that we had a couple of days ago, you could move to 100% fee supported.
Okay.
Animal health program, Chuck, do you want to try to speak to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I think I forgot to identify myself previously. Chuck Craig with Department of Ag. The animal health program has a mixture of fee revenues and general fund, and there may be the possibility for some additional fund shift there. We did fund shift an entire field veterinarian completely to other funds during the previous special sessions, but we can take a look at what the possibilities are here, Mr. Chair.
And maybe we can just touch on those programs that have obviously a significant amount of general fund in them. The plant pest and disease program, Chuck, again, can speak to it, but my understanding is there's not fees that support this program.
Mr. Chair, there are no fees for that. It was entirely generally funded. However, this is part of a cluster of programs in which we're looking at the potential for Measure 66 funding.
You might speak briefly to the other funds that are in that program.
In
the plant pest and disease.
Oh, in plant pest and disease. Plant pest and disease has other funds that come from the nursery program. There are licensing fees and inspection fees for certificates, essentially, that allow the export of nursery stock. And also, some of the federal funds that come into that program actually become classified as other funds because it's work being done for the federal government, so they may show up that way. So there is in our agency fee bill a significant increase in the amount of fee revenue going into particularly the nursery program to deal with the increased workload in that program.
Okay. The fourth item is the Ag Development and Marketing Division, and it is all general fund. There are no fees that support that program. A little bit of other fund that you see there is the Commodity Commission position, and the Commodity Commission is to pay support there. Line 7 is the Oregon Plan money, and obviously that's another candidate that you all have talked about in terms of Measure $66, and that was a fund shift during the special session effort. There was more lottery money put into that during in the governor's balanced budget process. That fund shift was basically backed out. Same is true, I believe, with line 9, the soil and water program, and potential for Measure $66 there. The weed program, Chuck, I guess they get a significant amount of Measure 66.
Let me ask you to back up. Confined animal feeding, there's some general fund in that too, I see.
Right. Mr. Chair, there's general fund, and then there are fees for CAFO permits, and there's also revenue that shows up as other funds that is federal in origin that either goes through another agency before it gets to us or it's work we're doing for EPA.
So then we're down, I guess, to line item 12, the shellfish program.
Again, let me go back to line 10. I think I broke it out here there.
Weed control.
Is there potential for fund shifts there? That is an issue with, maybe that's already done with the lottery funds.
That is Measure $66.
Mr. Chair, we did do some additional fund shift. This program has two components. There's a general fund component, and then there's a lottery fund component that was an enhancement of the program that provides for some additional capacity and biological control and things like that. But mostly it's a grant program to the local weed boards and to local organizations for noxious weed control. We did some fund shift of some of our program staff positions that are field positions that work on watershed-related projects largely already in response to the situation, but we're taking another look at that to see if we could actually justify any more.
Okay. Base pesticides program just has a very small amount of general fund, and I don't know if you're not, Mr. Chair, apparently it has no general fund. That number really isn't there.
Okay, good. Thanks. I'll be right there.
What do I do with that?
That's up to you.
Hit me on the head.
The
shellfish program obviously has a significant amount of general fund in it. They do collect some fees in that program. This is the money that basically allows the commercial shellfish harvesters to ship in out of state. Feeds, does it really have a little general fund?
No,
okay.
It does not.
Okay.
It's a mistake.
So then we're down line 21, 22, and 23. This is all of our administration and administrative services, and they receive a general fund appropriation that closely reflects kind of the other fund general fund mix in our agency's budget. Again, we were speaking yesterday to the fact that in admin, info, and administration, we do not We only assess the other funds parts of the programs. We do not assess the general fund parts of those programs. We get a direct general fund appropriation, in essence, to support our general fund part of our budget. Line 25, the regulatory lab. Speak to the general fund and edge.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director with the Department of Agriculture. Our regulatory lab is split with general fund and other funds. The general fund is drinking water work that we do for the Department of Environmental Quality, and that appropriation comes directly to us. The other funds, a portion of that is basically work that is done for the food safety and the pesticides division within our agency.
Line 29, transaction verification, did that actually go away? General fund? $30,000.
There is a small amount left in our packaging program to act on respond to complaints only.
That's what that is, that the whole line?
Yes.
Okay.
And then finally, the general fund program, line 36, the pesticide use reporting system. That's the general fund to operate the system that's matched with fees.
Mr. Chair, that's general fund to operate the system, assuming completion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that's correct.
And what are we short on completion? We talked about that a while back, and I can't recall the dollar figure now. 250,000 or something of that nature, 270.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, you are correct. We're short about $250,000 for completing the system development.
And it would take this much to run it?
Yes, it would take approximately $1.2 million to operate the system during the next biennium.
Any other questions on that?
No, thank you.
Okay.
We're done on that.
We can move to the...
I'm certain, though, when Senator Mesley gets back, he's going to ask further questions. Knowing him.
Mr. Chair, we can move to the vacancy list.
Yeah.
And you will see that the vacancy list is long. And that is primarily because we have so many seasonal positions in our agency. We do a lot of seasonal work. So what we tried to do for you was put the vacancies into some categories that made a little more sense. We have the first category are those positions that are funded completely with general fund. The second category are positions that have a mix of general fund and other fund in them, and that basically is the first page. Then beginning on the second page, the remainder of the positions are in other funded programs, and the majority of those are seasonal or based on receipt of fees for services. So if we get money in, we have people to do the work. So let's maybe go back to the,
front
page, which
yeah,
I think is
forward.
Probably where the most interest is. The first three positions are all in the Ag Development and Marketing Division program. You can see one of those positions has been abolished. The two other positions are positions that were filled during this current biennium and the incumbents left. And so we held those positions vacant per, you know, instructions in dealing with budget shortfall. We held those positions vacant for vacancy savings.
Were those retirees or those people that moved on to some other position?
Sure, those are people that moved on to another job.
Somewhere else, how your agency. Okay.
Then you see we move down to the plant division. We have a natural resources specialist 4. This is actually a position where the incumbent retired, and we have that person hired on contract, but he will not obviously continue on indefinitely in that position, and once he decides to not work for us anymore, we will need that position to refill it.
Mr. Chair, this is the grasshopper control specialist for Eastern Oregon, and also does the onion maggot trapping and other insect trapping work and gypsy moth work in Eastern Oregon. This person is working as a temp for us now, and we think that's probably good for about one more year before he's going to fully retire.
Okay. Do you plan on funding that or try to get funding for it through the whole binding?
Well, we certainly would like to keep this position and fill it because grasshoppers are a very serious pest and cause a tremendous amount of economic damage, as well as the other insects that this person works on. So we would plan to do that if we're able to.
This position is in the governor's balanced budget and funded.
Yes. Okay.
And we've got a couple of office specialist 2 positions. Chuck, you want to speak to those?
Mr. Chair, the first one is filled by attempt because of the hiring freeze. We would go that one if we could when the hiring freeze is lifted. The second one is a seasonal and part-time position. It's a six-month position that we tend to bring someone in during the shipping season and during periods when our workload goes up, and it's vacant because of that right now.
And then finally, the last position there, the Natural Resources Specialist 4 position, has been abolished as part of the special session effort. So that position is no longer to be with us.
You had a person trying to figure out which one it is. It's this. Underneath the hiring freeze, you said, and then you hired a temp to take care of the person you couldn't replace during the hiring freeze?
On the office specialist too, yes. The hiring freeze prevents us from hiring a permanent position, so we have a temp doing that work.
It almost sounds like a circumventing the hiring freeze. Is that a common practice to bring someone in to take the position that still costs money?
Well, I think that, you know, it's a matter of, do we have work there that has to be done, and do we need to find an alternative way of doing it? And in this case, it costs less, and the work is there. So,
there were, Mr. Chair, if I might respond as well, there were, during the interim, obviously agencies were instructed to look for savings wherever they could, and one of those opportunities would be vacancy savings, and we're closely with budget management division, and then obviously with legislative fiscal office to identify those positions which we could keep vacant and provide savings and provide a number of actual
so
savings.
So if you save a position over here, you can take those savings around?
Mr. Chairman, no. Those savings were offered up, taken out of our agency. Then we had situations where if we felt we really needed, this may be the only one, I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair, another thing is we self-imposed a hiring freeze on general fund positions before the statewide one. And so in some cases, and I think this is one, attempt was brought in to do work at a lower cost rather than permanently fill the position. So,
do you know if that happened actually before the hiring freeze, you know, the state hiring freeze then?
I think it did, but I can check for it.
I just kind of wanted off my top of my head.
All right. Because I'm not aware of anyone that has just showed up in that division, so...
Then we can move down to the positions that are funded with a combination of general and other fund. First is in the Animal Health Division, an Office Specialist 1 position, where part of the savings from keeping that position open were used to reclass another individual.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So if just the savings were used to reclass another individual, you held the space open. Have you actually burned the position at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'd have to check. There might be a fragment of a position left. But this position was used to finance the extension of an existing position from a 20-month position to a 24-month position. It actually wasn't a reclass. It was just making a technician in the animal health lab a full-time position. So we'll check for you and see if there's anything left. But
follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
I think what you're hearing from my colleague as well as myself is the question about agencies either holding positions open and using the positions to reclass up, or just how serious the hiring freeze is. We've been scrutinizing what hiring freezes really look like and how much teeth they have in them, and whether or not these would be adjustments that you would make with any coordination with DAS, or the agency unilaterally could decide those things. And I'm assuming these were unilateral agency decisions. No? Good.
Just about any reclass we do requires DAS approval. So.
Okay. One other question. In looking at the reasons for why folks are no longer here, the seasonal, when will you begin ramping up seasonally? Do you go with the spring and the crops coming up, or does something other than that guide your hiring for the seasonals?
That's probably the largest single factor, but in the plant pest and disease program, it depends on the disease cycle and when it's advantageous to do trapping work and so on like that. So
what I'm obviously trying to get a sense of is how long could you hold some of these positions? Some of them, clearly, where there's no funding, the answer is there if funds are not made available. Some of the vacancies, I don't know whether or not you've contemplated what's the last possible date you could do a successful recruitment. Because each recruitment takes some period of time, and you wouldn't want to lose, say, a trapping opportunity window by doing the recruitment that took too long. But what I'm really getting around to is this is a large number of vacancies. I understand what you're saying by nature of the seasonal work that you do, but how much you've assessed these to say if there is no money available to the agency, if some additional general fund is stripped out, how does that correlate to the vacancies, and at what point do you cut so badly that you've lost your efficacy?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, again, the front page, these are the only positions that have general fund in them. The remainder of the positions are all other fund positions. And so those really are driven by the seasonal work, when we receive fees, when we're being asked to provide work for those customers. In terms of the general fund, the only one, just looking back at this really quickly, the only one that is really identified as seasonal, with some seasonal demands, is the office specialist 2 in the plant division.
Yeah.
So these are not necessarily seasonal type work.
Are the pesticide reporting folks, is that the only program they're limited to, or is there any cross-training in any of this so you're losing other program by your inability to fill those pesticide use reporting slots?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, Lisa Hansen is here, but my understanding, those six positions are tied to completion and operation of the system, and it's on hold now.
She's so nodding behind you, sir.
Sitting there waiting for direction from the legislature.
Just one, it talks about being general fund and other funds. You got a certain number of people. We don't know how many dollars they represent.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krieger, I don't think we have gone, we have not for the committee identified what the general fund portion of money is in those general fund other fund positions. We could go back and do that for you if we were.
Wouldn't be surprised before we're done. We're not going to need that. I think we want to know it. Go ahead.
Okay. I think we're down to the second position under the general fund other fund category, the compliance specialist 2 with the measurement standards division. And it appears this fell under the hiring freeze and then was shifted completely to other fund during one of the special sessions. So this is now coming up into the next biennium, will be funded all with other funds.
Okay.
Then you can see the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 positions that are all in the pesticides program that are tied to the pesticide use reporting system. Those are all vacant now. The district veterinarian in the livestock program, that is a retire or?
Well, it was vacant because of a retirement, but the position now has actually been fund shifted entirely to other funds.
So you still have the position, but right. It's just as a general fund.
Right.
Okay.
That is a position that we'll need to fill. Then in the plant division, we've got a natural resources specialist 1.
Yes, this is a position in the weed control program that we've held vacant, and it is a relatively lower priority position.
And then we have a natural resources specialist 3 in the food safety program.
That's a retirement.
The 3 other PERS positions, and then the last one in this category, this is a position where the person retired and they are volunteering for us now, but again,
can you get more of them to do that?
Yeah.
That sounds like the way to go.
Expect that to go on indefinitely, so once that person moves on, that would be a position that we would need to fill.
That's a great American.
That is.
How long has that person been doing there?
I think perhaps somewhat less than a year. I'm not exactly sure, but it's an entomologist.
Actually been working that much?
This person loves to do what he does. And
can you get me the name?
Sure.
And phone number or address so I can write?
Sure.
Okay. I appreciate it.
I know who it is. And they're
just get up to my office so we know.
So then, as you can see, the rest of the positions are all the other funded positions on your list. I don't know if you want to go through those or...
Well, they're all other funds. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I'm fine
with them. Like they are. We can talk about them, but probably it's not going to make any difference to take up time. We can go on to whatever you've got, whichever you want to go next on.
Those were the things that I wanted to cover with the committee today. Unless there were particular things you want to go into 30% list. Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, yesterday we handed this out and indicated that those items that have been bolded, action has been taken already through the course of the special sessions on those programs. Obviously, the predator control program is something that has strong interest from the committee. That was a $419,245 in general fund that was reduced in the special sessions, and
House Bill 5100,
and that in House Bill 5100 and has rolled up to a zero funding in the governor's balanced budget. Threatened endangered plant program appears funding was shifted to federal fund.
That's right. The general fund was removed from this program and it was shifted to an entirely federally funded basis.
Then we have the Pesticide Analytical Response Center, which we talked about a little bit yesterday, and you have some information. I believe this was another one in House Bill 5100. It's a program that's been funded with general fund and some fees, and that funding has been eliminated in the governor's balanced budget. We're on to item 4. And, Mr. Chair, if you'd like us to go back to the beginning of the 30% list, we'd be happy to do that.
I'll catch up.
Item 4 is the Weed Board grants. I'm learning with you. It's moved out of a base package and restored.
Mr. Chair, this was a fund shift for staff positions that actually do work in the field in the noxious weed control program that have a watershed nature to them. These were shifted from general fund to Measure 66 funds, but in so doing, the grant. The amount of grant funds available was reduced by the same amount.
So basically what we have in the governor's balanced budget, if I have this correct, is lottery dollars that support the staff positions. Reduced the grant amount.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, these lottery dollars are Measure 66 capital expenditures.
So these are the from the 65% that go for capital expenditures, and they use the balance for grants. There was also a small increase that doesn't show up on this for the Measure 66 capital side of roughly $100,000. So that offsets somewhat the reduction to the grants program.
Katie, I would like to go back to number one, if I could, just for a second. I think I asked if you could prepare something that would show us what the impact of losing that fund would do to the total programs. Do you have that for us?
Mr. Chair, we're conducting a poll of the animal damage control programs on a county basis right now, and as of the time we had to leave, we had been through about six of them. And it would appear that the impact is going to be significant, although I think we haven't spoken with some of the ones in Central Oregon that we think are in most jeopardy. Crook County indicated they would terminate the program and go with a local trapper if they did anything. Yamhill said the board was planning to drop the program anyway, so it wouldn't be any impact. And Mal here said that it would be a very serious loss to them. They weren't sure what they were going to do, but when we have had a chance to talk to as many of them as we can, we'll try to present the best summary that we can to you.
And it would be interesting have you talk to the federal government and what is their response if they lost that kind of support.
We've talked a number of times to Dave Williams about it, and it's a serious loss of resources for them.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, it actually transcends just the effect on the agricultural community, because I know that the aviation community relies very heavily on Dave Williams and his shop for all kinds of work around migratory birds and predators at airports. His shop has had manifold other benefits besides just an agricultural application.
There are a number of other problems, public safety problems, like, as Representative mentioned, birds at airports, urban raccoons that become a nuisance and potentially a vector for problems, things of that nature. So they have a pretty wide span of problems they deal with.
Representative Krieger.
I think the type of complaints they could, like the urban raccoon, could remain an urban raccoon because they're not going to have time to go after him. The other priorities, but there are. Now, I talked to Williams about the federal funds they get, those funds that you get from this department, and then some of the counties like Curry County where we pay in so much per acre to companies and farm and ranch people to keep that program supported. So there's people recognize it's darned important and want to try to keep it.
And there are problems out there we're not addressing. We've discussed a couple times here the very severe damage that bears are doing to fir trees in some parts of the state.
I'd like to add the conversation that I know for a fact there's ODOT uses the facility, the services for beaver and culverts, mm-hmm. Skunks in their urban areas, cougar in some of our urban areas, and they've had to work on to get them back out of the community. So, well, I look forward to hearing a full report when you get it, because I think it's something that we're going to have to take a really, really careful look at. Thank you.
Next item five, were some reductions in the Natural Resources Division related to the Oregon Plan.
What, do you have an idea what that would entail?
It looks like far right column says one position was eliminated in the governor's balanced budget. There is $513,000 general fund remaining in the governor's balanced budget, and this is also potential money for a fund shift.
Questions?
Then let me just skip to the other item that was eliminated. I'll already on, and that's item 12, a position in the Ag Development Marketing Division was eliminated. So items 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 are items that were on our 30% cut list but have not been cut. Item 6 is the pesticide use reporting system, the nearly $600,000 in general fund. Item 7 is the county fairs program, the lottery dollars, which pass through our agency.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I see Mr. McCulley in the audience, and he's going to just fall over, so I hope somebody will be there to prop him up when I ask this question. Given the magnitude of the cuts that have already happened in this department and the ripple effect that they have through the agricultural community, it seems to me that if anybody were vested in a successful outcome for the department, it would be the folks who are patrons and participants in county fairs. And I'm wondering whether or not, in looking at the fact that this is on your 30% list, if you've had a conversation with Mr. McCulley or any of the county fairs about foregoing some of this money that was ostensibly a new program last session, as long as they had the guarantee that it was feeding back into programs that the agricultural community holds in high value, and just suspend the payments to the county fairs in the hope of propping up the agency and the value they confer on the state until after this economic crisis has passed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I've not had that conversation with Mr. McCulley. I've been around this building enough to know all the effort that has gone into securing funding for county fairs, and I'm very sensitive to that issue. Probably the main reason, and we did visit about this briefly yesterday, that it is on our 30% cut list is it's a pass-through through our agency, and so it does not directly support our core mission.
Yeah, you take no administrative. It just actually, nothing sticks as it moves through.
36 checks.
And so, you know, one option is not even have it in our agency's budget, but potentially put it in DAS's budget or what have you. We can certainly have that conversation. I also know who employs Mr. McCulley.
Chair.
Representative Krieger.
That budget, I believe, long before I ever got in this building, was always in there. Be cut by the governor. Be 100 people in the room, all walks of life in Portland. Doesn't matter where it was. It isn't just a rural issue. And I think that's the one thing. Fairs aren't just for rural Oregon. They're for all Oregon. That, to me, is really important. Anything in my mind that might kind of bring all this together is to continue where that kind of summer, whether you call it a social thing or whatever you want to call it, it's a gathering place. It's a summer thing that takes place where people go to fairs, and to me it's extremely important, 4-H and kids. And, you know, that was a real focal point last year. I know in your committee on the Senate side, it was over in the House side in the Ag and Timber where I served last time. And though we need to look, possibly to ask the questions that Representative Johnson has asked, I would hope that it would be a long ways down the line before we get there.
Representative Johnson.
My purpose was not in opening the debate about whether county fairs are good or bad. I sponsored legislation to help make that bill work because county fairs are held in high value in my communities. My point in raising it was we are asking a lot of Oregonians to feel a lot of pain. And many of my constituents have approached me and said, why don't you look at new programs that came out of the last legislative session? And I just would at least recommend that the conversation take place because this seems to me to be, if the guarantees could be in place, that the saved money would continue to pay for exactly those programs that are held in high regard, animal health and welfare, the inspection of beef, those sorts of things. So there's a nexus between the saved dollars and programs of value to the agricultural community. And I'm not saying take the money away. I'm saying look at a suspension for some period of time, or a partial suspension. I'm just saying that occurring not very far from this room right now are people poring over lists of cuts. And before this is all over, we may be, in some cases, deeper than 30%. So I just offer it as a suggestion. I'm not advocating that. It's just point of conversation.
I think, Representative, it's a good point, and I can assure you that those conversations are already happening. I have personally had those conversations today, as a matter of fact, and so it is on the table.
Good.
And we will be negotiating.
Thanks.
Item 8 is a reduction in pass-through funding to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. This is the money, as I understand it, that supports their administration. Item 9, special payments on the Oregon plan. Again, pass-through money that goes to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts that then they actually put on the ground for projects. This is lottery dollars, so it's currently major $66.
Hey, if I could back up to number 8, Chuck, maybe this is for you. It would be good to know what is the impact of taking that administration money away from the Soil and Water Districts. I think there might be a few that have a tax basis, but most of them do not, and I think they operate with one staff member now, and if we take that administration away, my guess is it could have huge impacts on the whole program. And they do quite an effective job of managing getting projects on the ground.
Mr. Chair, I certainly agree. For the amount of funding they get, they do an unbelievable job. We did a little homework that, based on the questions that you asked in the first meeting, and I might just relate that to you right now, and then we'll follow it up with a written report to the committee. But on the $2.4 million for OWEB, that is the technical assistance grants, those are given out on a county basis. Individual districts don't get them. Then the administrative grants that are described here are, there was some reform in the way that these were distributed several years ago, and now we will not give more than 2 administrative grants per county. So there's one, actually there's 6 counties that have more than one district, but there's one that has 4. And it's not an entitlement. The district to get the administrative grant has to submit a work plan and a substantiation of what they're going to do with the money that's reviewed very carefully by our staff in the Soil and Water Conservation Commission. So, you know, that over time the number of districts has actually gone down from something like 65 40 or 50 years ago down to the 45 that we have now, and we haven't been able to stimulate much interest in further reducing them, but I did want you to know that steps have been taken not to just give a district money because it's a district, and that we are trying to conserve the funding. So,
would it be possible to identify how much staff each district has?
I think we have that information.
That might be interesting, too, because some of them quite heavily staffed and some of them are bare bones, and we could tie that to how much money they pass through or what kind of programs they have. So,
and 3 districts have tax bases now.
3.
Okay. Item 10, Chuck is going to have to address how this is different from item 9.
Mr. Chair and members, this is another component of the support that the department provides for districts. Districts serve as local management agencies for the department in the implementation of Senate Bill 1010 plans. They do workshops, demonstration projects, help organize the meetings and coordinate things, and we... When we establish a district as a local management agency. We do that with an interagency agreement, and we provide funding for that purpose to the district to help support the costs of those functions that they perform. And that's what that item is all about.
So am I reading this right? You're taking half of it?
This particular reduction hasn't been taken yet, but what this item would do would take 45% of it.
Oh, I see.
So moving item the last item on the 30% cut list that's not been taken is the shellfish program. This would take all of the general fund out of the shellfish program, which basically shuts the program down, and commercial shellfish operators would not be able to ship shellfish out of the state.
This would effectively shut the industry down. Representative Johnson?
How big a universe of folks do you inspect? I'm sorry to have such an appalling ignorance about this, but I was just trying to see if there's a fee structure that could be put in place to salvage the industry if $500,000 in general fund could shut it down. I mean, that's terribly serious.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, there are, you can see there is another fund component to this of
right.
$104,000. That is a fee on shellfish.
Right, folks. But if you needed to increase the fee, I'm just trying to figure out how big is the universe.
Why don't we go back and see if we've got that and what it would take in terms of a fee increase to
it looks like about double. And I don't know whether that's palatable. I don't know what the fee is now. I don't know if there's any distinction between big processors and some guy with a half a dozen crab pots. I just don't know the...
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we'll need to gather the info on this because I don't think we know the number of producers per se, but this program serves both the commercial harvesters and the public as at large by issuing the advisories on whether it's safe to harvest recreationally.
Sounds like pretty good bang for the buck for this amount of money, given that it would affect the entire coast, I would presume.
Right.
Okay. Don't do a whole bunch of research. I pretty much answered my own question.
And also, Representative, my perception of that industry is not in good shape anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
I know where some of my area are just about to go under.
In fact, don't do any research.
Okay. Save the money.
Save the money. That's
And that's what our committee is all about.
That's right.
Mr. Chair, I believe we've reviewed information, unless other specific pieces you want to talk about, or Paul, if you have any.
I just have one question on number 10. I know we shifted part of the other general fund support for soil water conservation districts in the second special session. Is this that section that was shifted? So I believe we shifted not only the grants that you pass out, but also some of the technical assistance side.
Mr. Chair, I think this was shifted, but then it was shifted back
right.
to general fund.
Right.
Any other questions? Katie? Where were you while I was gone? I'm lost.
You made a lot
Chairman,
of headway
if you
when
only
you were
knew.
I was afraid of that.
We did great work while you were gone.
That's good. Should have left a long time ago. What do we want to do now?
That is up to you. You can take the rest of the time off if you want.
You might want to announce we're not going to have this.
Did you have anything else you'd like to present to us today? I don't want to close here. I want to ask, is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify this afternoon as opposed to coming in tomorrow? Okay, I see Glenn Stonebrink and Dave Nelson. Why don't you both come up?
Thank you, Katie. That's you've been very responsive. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Glenn Stonebrink. I represent the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Because I'm testifying today instead of tomorrow, I do not have any elaborate written testimony, which I wouldn't have anyway.
I say you're welcome to turn it in tomorrow.
Basic comments. We have a very good working relationship with the Department of Agriculture on most everything. I understand there's a process going on with OWEB funds and this sort of thing. But I see things like Senate Bill 1010, the CAFO programs. Those are direct water quality programs that I would like to see funded through OWEB. And how we get there, I'm not quite sure, but I think all of you understand that. And then, of course, the other two areas that we desperately need, and you've touched on them already, but predator control is a big issue. And noxious weeds. It seems like we talk about noxious weeds every session. And I talk with the feds about noxious weeds, and we just do a lot of talking. They just keep growing, and they keep getting the areas keep of infestation keep getting larger. And it's not just the livestock industry; it's the wildlife habitat that's being encroached upon, and I certainly would like to see some way we can start getting some things on the ground, and maybe even some urging from this body to, with the feds, to let us do some eradication on some federal lands with over 52% of our state still under the control, I guess ownership as well, of the federal government. That's one of our biggest problems, and it doesn't. It does some good to eradicate them on private land, but they just keep coming right back, as you know. So that's, I would urge you support for this budget, and thank you very much.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You touched on the water quality programs from the contained animal feeding, and you mentioned something about OWEB. You probably wouldn't have said that if you didn't have a suggestion. If you could wave a wand and make something happen, what would you do?
Well, what, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, everybody's scrambling for funds, as we know, and I've watched OWEB since the beginning of the Oregon Plan, and I see the funds go in, and I heard the discussions that were made after Measure 66 passed and what could be spent from those monies and what couldn't be spent. And I very definitely see Senate Bill 1010, which is water quality and agriculture, and then the CAFO is water quality from agriculture. But I'd like to see the fund, some enough funds come from OWEB to pay for what is necessary that's being done by the Department of Agriculture for the staffing. And it does take a lot of staff time to do those inspections and implementation on the ground so that this budget could then use some of those funds to do noxious weeds or predator control. Now, perhaps those fit also under OWEB territory, but if they don't, those are some very large necessities that we need.
Thank you. That was helpful.
Senator Krieger.
I would just caution Representative Johnson, if you ask Mr. Stonebrink what he would do if he had a magic wand he could wave,
you don't know what you might get.
I did have to think about that.
Yeah, that scared me for a minute.
It's just my trusting girlish nature that allowed me to ask such an open-ended question.
There's another aspect of that this discussion that I'd like to raise, and that is that through the Oregon Salmon Plan, and, the 10-10 program, everything that, that follows and develops, as we're setting aside more riparian zones and more wetlands, comes with that the weed problems. Very apparent on the Boardman property with the dairies that were developed up there. I think they part of the deal was that Nature Conservancy got 12,000 acres and were very concerned. The ranchers, the farms were very concerned. Dave, you might want to speak to this. Of the weeds that were going to be a real problem. They're a problem there now, but the landowners were dealing with them as they developed the property. But if you set aside that kind of property adjacent to an operating farm and alfalfa fields and those kind of things, it would be a tremendous problem. And I know that one of the solutions was that they were going to, the Nature Conservancy was going to apply to OLIB for funds to manage that land, which to me is not really what those funds were intended for.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add, excuse me.
But I just wanted to raise that point that that's something we need to be thinking about. As we do some of these programs in the name of trying to improve water quality and improve our stockings of fisheries, there are some negatives that happen. And you can't put all of that burden back on the landowner.
I'm just going to add that I know a lot of our ranchers would like to apply for some OWEB grants to manage their ranches. I mean, just tongue-in-cheek type thing. If we, you know, if we can just go to the government to get money to manage our ranch. But the other thing you touched on that is very serious, and I think this is as good a time in the history of this state to think about it as any, is that how much can we afford? How much conservation, wetlands? I mean, when a private landowner wants to do something with an acre of wetlands, they have to produce 3 acres over here somewhere, and it's very costly and very timely. Last year, I attended several sessions, and one this special workshop, this session on the West Nile virus. It's coming. It'll probably be in Oregon this next year, transferred by mosquitoes. And where do mosquitoes come from? Our wetland. And we don't seem to address these things as a public health issue. It's just that we've gotten into our heads that these things are all good. And I agree, there's some very balance, there's a balance there of good things with wetlands and such. But how much is enough? What can we afford? How far do we want to keep going?
I can tell you, Mr. Stone-Rankin, we raised that issue during the interim in the Natural Resource Joint Committee. And that when OWEB comes back to us here in a couple of weeks, that we'll raise the issue again. Because we need to make that connection. I don't know what we can do about it, but we at least have to have it on the table and talk about it. Representative Johnson?
One more appallingly dumb question. If I understood you correctly, the question was having folks apply to OWEB for funds, and I understood you were joking about the ranchers. But if OWEB has the funds to do certain water quality programs, and we've just gone through an agency budget that doesn't have a lot of spare money to do these, in a time of kind of budget exigency, does it make sense to look at consolidating programs in agencies where you would have all of the programs consolidated instead of little pieces of a water quality program being in lots of places, and you'd consolidate it where the lion's share of money existed in order to deal with an issue? And I've said this very obliquely. Let me try one more shot at it. You've got ODF&W doing a little bit of water. You've got agriculture doing a little bit of water. You've got somebody else. I don't even know who they all are. But to consolidate all of those water quality issues in
a place where the money exists. Does that make any sense?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Your colleague just shaking his head no.
It makes a whole lot of sense, but we've created such a huge piece of machinery that it would take a long time to get that done as slow as government works. I couldn't run a business the way government works. I wouldn't run a business. You couldn't be successful because I would not have all of those things in all those different shops. But I think under the Oregon plan, it was an attempt to get all of the agencies to come together, to work together, coordinate those efforts. I heard all of the good words. But the nature of government, I'm not pointing to any particular agency or any particular individuals in those agencies, but the nature of government is not to do that. The nature of government is for agencies to grow and have turf battles over some of these things. And I've never seen anyone become the head of an agency who would say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to start making this run more efficient by, we don't need to be doing this and someone else doing this. Let's flip a coin or something and one agency do it. I've never seen that happen. But it would be the right thing to do. I agree with you.
I actually can respond. I know it does happen because I did it when I ran aeronautics. But it surprised me, the level of resistance. I'm just trying to think, who all would you need to have in one place to have the discussion about it? Who's a convener to hold that discussion?
The governor.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Let me respond first, Representative Greer. Let me give you some history. In 1997, when we were adopting the Oregon Salmon Plan, many of us felt very strongly that the soil and water districts ought to take a lead role in that, simply because they are an extension of the Department of Agriculture, number one. They are locally elected board. They have authority, and we simply couldn't get it through the process. And I would totally agree that right now we've got a mishmash of where the funding comes, how it comes together, who's in control. Matter of fact, it's more than a mishmash. It's a turf battle. And if we could get the right people lined up, I think it is time to start consolidating them. And the people that are managing those funds should have authority to do something on the ground, which not many of our organizations do. I think it's right. I'd be very supportive if we could get something together.
I just want to make sure that you and the rest of the committee and the people that are listening to this hearing know that my questions don't reflect a bias one way or another. This is an area where I have not had a great deal of expertise or exposure. This is my first service on this committee, and in getting to know the agency budgets, just some questions seem to be clear, and that's what's motivating my question.
Very good question. Thank you.
Well, Representative, you're forgiven, and as long as you vote with the rest of the committee,
Mr. Nelson, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Nelson. I represent the Oregon Seed Council, which is the grass seed growers of the state of Oregon, and the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, and several others. Let me comment. I think we appreciate what the Department of Agriculture does for the agricultural community, and we work very closely and interactively with the department on a variety of programs. I'm just ticking off on the list here that we're intimately involved in 13 of the 37 programs that are listed there. I'd like to comment on just very briefly on some of the conversation that's gone on. OWEB has been an important part, and whether it was OWEB or whether it was the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board, to the dairy industry, and that they have provided funds. And I think Representative Krieger was on the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board back in the first time that the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association applied for some funding for staff assistance to bring dairy CAFO programs and plans on farm up to speed so that we worked integrally to minimize the impact of the dairy industry on water quality in the state. And it's been very, very important to bring all of those into line it's been very beneficial not only to the dairy farmers but also to, I think, water quality in the state. West Nile virus just cost me $300 to give my horses shots. So, and it's another $150 in another 5 months. So that's
the economy.
So that's something that's on the that's very much here, and it's a very important problem to the horse owners of the state, and a very expensive problem to the horse owners of the state. Would like to just throw a rock in a pile of support for the Agricultural Development Division. I think it's one of the most important activities that the Department of Agriculture undertakes. I've given you a graph of seed exports to China. The Oregon Seed Council has an extensive market development program in China that's largely funded by a grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Foreign Agricultural Service. With congressional monies, you can see we began doing market exposure, I guess, to China in 1980 with the Ag Development Division. That kind of rocked along through the 80s. It was shut down during the Tiananmen Square effort. We reignited that activity in 1992 and began doing some intensive market development activity, brought together the Oregon Department of Agriculture, the Oregon State University, and the industry, and you can see the results. We've jumped from less than 100,000 pounds of sales per year to about 13 million pounds in 2000. That's about $7 million in sales. While it's still in a small compared to the total output of the Oregon seed industry, we expect that that we have an opportunity to sell about 50 million pounds of seed to China over the course of the next 5 years as they prepare for the 2008 Olympics in Beijing. So I think it's that kind of activity in the Middle East, in China, a lot of countries around the world. You have to involve government in your discussions and in your deliberations, since they typically deal government to government, and industries just by themselves have a very difficult time getting in the door. So if there's anything that you can toss a few more bucks in, help us sell our products. This is kind of a unique program. Nike makes stuff in China and sells it here. We make stuff here and sell it in China. So I think that's the kind of activity that we really ought to be looking to advance in the Department of Agriculture. So I'm going to answer any questions. Be happy to.
Dave, I just want to correct you maybe a little bit. In this environment we're in right now, we're not going to be throwing more in. You're going to try to stop taking money out. Representative Krieger?
Back to our prior subject about wetland issues, and that there were many participants in it, you know, OWEB and Ag and even forestry to some degree in some places, and, of course, OWEB. But certain clientele or constituent bases are more comfortable with certain agencies. I would guess that most ag people would have preferred the 10-10 plans, for instance, to be under ag than DEQ. So sometimes things get separated out, I think, that way for that reason, that they feel more comfortable working with certain people that they have confidence in and have a history with.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger's statement, I think that's absolutely right. And as you look at why the ag community in 1993 lobbied for Senate Bill 1010 to be placed in the Department of Agriculture, it was for that very reason. But I think that it has served the ag community much better being there. And I think the same comment applies to the consolidation of OWEB activities, or you disperse it out. If we could have OWEB in the Department of Agriculture, we'd be happy. If it was in the Department of Environmental Quality, then, you know, agriculture really doesn't have a lot of sex appeal in DEQ. And so we tend to be on the minor end of the requests. So I guess sometimes it's better to be somewhat dispersed and rather than trying to be consolidated. I guess it just depends on who's driving the boat.
One final comment, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. You know, having looked at the Department of Agriculture for several sessions in their budget, and I think even some of the members of the legislatures have acknowledged this, that, you know, they've been pretty frugal in the past when there were more funds available in the total budget, but they've been very frugal with things, and they get things done without a lot of waste. So that's why in times of cuts, it sometimes hurts a little bit to see a department that does provide a lot of services for us and for the state as a whole to to be, you know, having to take those same kind of cuts. There's no reward for being frugal, I guess. And I really admire them for what they've done in the past, and hope they'll be able to keep some services in the future.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify on the Department of Ag budgets? We'll also be having public hearings tomorrow, and we'll pass the note that there will be no Natural Resource Committee meetings, subcommittee meetings next week. We're going to be working solely on the overall three budget and fill in our hole. So, again, if there's no more testimony, I will close the public hearing and adjourn the committee.